Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. You and Your Democracy, it's a series of short-take civics lessons hosted by Chuck Parkinson. You can find the full series online at sdpb.org/yourdemocracy. In today's episode, Chuck talks with Dorothy Browick, retired Rapid City Area School District social studies teacher. In this discussion, it's part two on the preamble to the Constitution. In the last episode, they made it through the ensure domestic tranquility portion of the document. Now Chuck asks Dorothy to pick up where they left off.
And just a little bit to bring everybody up to snuff, I'm talking about the mnemonic I use to teach my students about the preamble to the Constitution. And it's FEIPS, F-E-I-P-P-S. And so we left on I, and that was ensure domestic tranquility. And since we were together, Chuck, even more has happened in the United States presently that that part of the purpose of our government is sort of challenged and certainly has been a topic of conversation. How do you ensure domestic tranquility and also protect the rights and make sure we have peace and order, but we make sure that people get to protest? So that was a good conversation last time, and I think that's one an ongoing conversation that people should be having. But the next part of the preamble to the Constitution is that our new government is designed to provide for the common defense of this country. And so, of course, I think that's very easy for people to understand. That is how come we have a government-financed military, or what we call the armed forces. And the purpose of the armed forces is to protect this country and the people within this, the borders of this country, from foreign or outside attack. That is the purpose of our military. And that was a very specific thing that the founding fathers realized, that what we needed was something that concentrated almost solely on protecting us from outside attack or foreign aggression.
And having just finished a revolution in which that outside foreign aggressor was there, the concept not to have that happen to us once again.
That's correct. But they left the state militias in place, and the state militias, and if we get to why it's a living document, there's part of an unwritten constitution, and our state militias, of course, sort of evolved into the National Guard, and that's for natural disasters, and there certainly is a purpose for some parts of the military within the country. But the military itself is to be used to protect us from outside aggression. So
I think that's one of the things that people don't always realize is mm-hmm. the fact that the law specifically forbids domestic military activities.
That's correct. Yes. And then there's, of course, more conversation about that. But that was the purpose of the military. And then the next P is promote the general welfare. And it can be as controversial as ensure domestic tranquility. But in the basic or core values that I talked about last time is the pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's talking about the general welfare of everyone within this country. And so back to those fundamental rights, if you are in this country, in the United States of America, you really should be free from abject poverty. You should be free from hunger. Everyone in this country should have access to healthcare. And we should be able, our dignity and our pride should be protected. And all of those things is promoting general welfare. And there's so many things tied to that. The Postal Service, it's a service that promotes our general welfare. It is the way that we move and communicates through the mail service, and that gives people access to all the rest of the United States is a large place, and we have access or connection to that. Another one today that has been in the news is the CDC. And, that is to control disease, plagues, as they say, or viruses. And it is the federal government's responsibility to protect us from viruses and also to make sure that we all have access to whatever is necessary so that we can stay healthy. So that too is, so appropriate, so pertinent to today. And then the S is, of course, secure the blessings of liberty. And it was very important, they believed, the founding fathers, to have that in this single sentence statement of purpose of our government, that everyone in this country should be guaranteed that none of our rights that have been listed and will be listed in the government, in the Constitution, should be taken away from us. And obviously, we are still working on that. But as I watched President Obama give the eulogy at John Lewis's memorial service today, and he sort of outlined, you know, how the government has, through different processes, changed or amended or interpreted the Constitution so that more and more people have received that guarantee, are benefactors of that, recipients of that part of the United States Constitution.
I think that's important because you touched on it being an evolving document in an evolving society. And in the founders, the only people at the point that had the right to vote after that were property owners, men who owned property. Mm-hmm.
And you know what's interesting about that is that before the Constitution was written, there were women in many of the colonies that were granted the right to vote for different, of course, we didn't have a president to vote for and those kinds of things. And then so many Americans were killed in the Revolutionary War, and they were men, and so many, many women inherited property, wives, daughters, nieces, and so all of a sudden there were a lot of women property owners, and so somehow the right to vote just sort of vanished. But of course, through the living document, of course, the right was once again restored.
I guess that might have been the case. We got a group of men together in a room, and they pulled the blinds down.
Right, those black curtains. That's right. And Abigail tried to be there, and she said, "Remember the women, John." But of course, and there's more to that story, just like there is in.
Right, you know, that's a thing that I would actually recommend, the biography of Abigail Adams in the letters she sent to her husband John Adams is a very interesting, very interesting read, and it kind of sets the stage as we continue to evolve. It took a long time, of course, for women to get the vote, but it was an evolutionary segment. I'd like you to touch a little bit more on about how we're evolving.
Well,
okay. You touched on that earlier when we were talking about the parts of the Constitution, of the preamble, and how we find it so much today, every day it comes into play.
Yes. Okay. Well, it was, so the preamble in the Constitution was adopted in 78, the ninth state, which made it official, and then finally in 1790, Rhode Island, that didn't participate in anything, finally ratified the Constitution by one vote. So, but then all 13 of the original colonies became part of the United States of America. And Rhode Island, that little tiny place, really held out, and of course it has its place in history as the last one. And in 1791, then, already the first way to keep a document, a living document, is to have made provisions to change it. So Article 5 of the Constitution, using the preamble as its guide, always came back to the form a more perfect union, which is what John Lewis was part of, forming a more perfect union. Establishing justice, and that's where the Supreme Court has so much to do with deciding, you know, and creating the court system and interpreting the laws, establishing justice, ensuring domestic tranquility, providing for the common defense, promoting the general welfare, and then securing the blessings of liberty. And it was ordained and established. And then they said for like ourselves and our posterity. So right away, they, as I said before, they could see down the way and see, okay, we've got to make this so that it's always in tune with what's happening in this country. So that, and it is the oldest living document in Constitution in the world. Anyway, and so it's a living document in the fact that we, it can be amended. And yeah, so it did go, like we said, from men with property now to actually all citizens of the United States, 18 and older, should be allowed to vote, are allowed, according to the Constitution, with very few exceptions.